chapter 16, verse 31. Okay? And it says, a beautiful crown is for an old person. Okay? In the method, in the path of righteousness, it will be found. The answer is that he's saying that long life comes from good traits, where the traits are equally divided. In other words, if you have a trait pulling you like drawing you, so then that's an extreme. That makes you, that takes away from your life. That affects your life. Okay? But evenly keeled is good. So there's two types of evenly keeled. Some people are born evenly keeled. It's a rarity, but it does happen. And the other way is by living the life of justice and righteousness. Okay? So therefore, the first thing is that the beauty when you see a person with old life, it means that they probably had good traits. You understand? Or another person that they had a life of justice and study in Musa. They studied Musa, the life of Musa worked through their traits. And so therefore, they took away their conflict. So therefore, they have a good life. Right, that's basically verse 31. Most of the commentaries say that the next three sukkim, that's 32, 33, and verse 1 of chapter 17 are all connected, and we will connect them also. But we'll learn slightly differently. Okay, the first passage says, it's better to be slow to anger than mighty, and it's better to control your spirit than to capture a city. Okay? Now, most of the commentaries learn, all the commentaries learn, that it's dealing with anger. Okay? I would like to deal with this and the next three psukim as control. Because if you look at the metaphor, in other words, it's talking about a gibor. What's a gibor? What's a strong person? In other words, he will use his strength whenever you do something he doesn't like. You see, so in a way he wants to control what you say to him or do to him or how you look at him, you understand? So he uses his power in a certain way to control you. The second one is his personality desires control. The first one is that he doesn't like what you do, so it's a situational thing, okay? Now, most of the times, these things happen with anger. That's why they talk about anger. Okay? So based on this, we'll learn the psukim based on control instead of anger. Okay? Okay. I'm not saying you can't be analyzed through anger. All the mepharshim do it, and yet you can do by reading through the commentaries. Okay? Okay. Now, the question is in the first one. Somebody starts up with you. Okay? Somebody insults you, right? Right. Now, so you have a choice of fighting back or slow to anger. Now, slow to anger doesn't mean I don't have anger. I have anger, but I control it. So what's the benefit if I... The question is, what's the benefit if I carry out my anger now or I carry it out in 10 minutes? Why is slow to anger better than... In other words, what's the difference doing it now and different is later? In other words, I'll punch him in the face now, I'll punch him in the face later. But it doesn't say you shouldn't have anger, it's slow to anger. In other words, you have to control your anger. What's the benefit? In other words, it does not say that you should control your anger till it goes away. It says you should be slow to anger. Okay? So it means that at some point you're going to be angry. What? Esther wants to say like this. Esther wants to say that you should not get angry right away, so you should plan out and you know, you take your vengeance, but it should be in a planned way so you get the least amount of harm and the greatest amount of the benefit to harm the person. You understand? In other words, we're starting out from a beginner. Person gets angry and he beats the person up, right? So we tell the guy, look, when you beat the person up, you're going to make the guy an enemy, then you're going to constantly fight with him. Work out a strategy. Don't carry out your anger right away, but work out a strategy how to hurt the guy. You understand? In the best possible way. You understand? So So at least do it as a chacham without having to, and do it with, you can even do it in a just way, in a, you know what I mean? You could do it in a way that you could hurt the guy where you're not doing anything wrong. But just before you carry it out, you have to have a strategy, have to get the guy. Okay? We are not advocating vengeance, okay? What we are saying is that if you want to take vengeance, do it as a thinker, as a chacham, and not as a jerk. You understand? Do it correctly. Think it through and carry it out. We're advising a person that's a beginner of, he doesn't have any good traits. He never learned. And he just lives a life, based on his emotions. So we say, we'll tell you a better way of dealing with your vengeance. We're not telling you to undo the vengeance. Not yet. That's the first step. Okay? Okay? Now, so the thing is that we said we're not talking about anger. We're talking about control. So we're going to measure. So we're talking about control. So the thing that says it's better to slow to anger than being a warrior where somebody starts up with you, you go out and kill him or fight him or beat him or do something to him physically. Why? Because you could carry out your vengeance in a much more intelligent way without getting into a big fight. So we're telling you there are two types of control. There's control of the other person through using physical force, or there's control of the other person through chachma. Okay? So we're telling you that the better way of control is through chachma. That's the first half of the pasuk, that it's better to get slow to anger than a gibor. That's what we covered. We're covering control. Okay? We're measuring two types of control, to control others or to control others through controlling yourself first. Okay? So we're saying that if you control yourself first, then you're better off, and then you can control others or take your vengeance on others. The question is why do we tell somebody to take vengeance, to control themselves for the purpose of taking vengeance? Okay? The answer is that we're taking a person from square one. Okay? So the thing is, insofar as perfecting the soul is concerned, you must have control over yourself. But I can't go against his total personality. It's a big mistake. People want to change overnight. There's no such thing as changing overnight. I must work with who I have. I must start from with the person who I have. This person is basically a person that lives a normal life. They get angry, they carry out their vengeance. You understand? If they're not cowards. If they're cowards, that's something else. Then they'll talk Lashon Hara or whatever. That's a separate thing. But there are a lot of people, that's what we call a gibor. He goes out and faces and confronts the other person whenever he's hurt. He confronts them. So we say, look, I'm not going to take away vengeance. That's a very big quality, a very difficult quality. But at least the first step is control your vengeance to do it in a way of chachma. That's the first step. So let me clarify. We're not telling you to do things that are unjust. We're not telling you to do things that are unjust. That the pasuk will not tell us. But the pasuk is saying that if you want to carry out vengeance, do it with chachma, so you should carry it out in a just way, and in a way that doesn't harm you. Okay? If a person can't control his anger to satisfy his vengeance, then I can't straighten the guy out anyway. There's no way of straightening the person out. But if the guy can control himself and do it at least in not an unjust way, to do it in a just way, so then it should be done in such a way. There are better ways of doing it. As long as it's not, I'm not talking about unjust. We're talking about you do it in a just way. You won't tell a person to go against Torah. Well, this is, in other words, Mishlei is a development after Torah, okay? So we're telling you just don't be unjust. Stop the guy from, hurt the guy somehow without really, anything. But the thing is, you can't help it. You have to take, you still your emotions. halacha is actions. In other words, you can't take incorrect actions. I mean, you're asking a person to change overnight. You don't change traits overnight. It's a slow development. There are two approaches. One approach is control yourself. You understand? You could do anything you want. So control yourself. Work on it. You understand? You understand? That's one approach. One approach is you should work with chokhmah and wisdom. Everything must be guided by chokhmah and wisdom. Now, if I'm going to guide you with chokhmah and wisdom, and I don't want to repress you, so, for instance, there is a chazal that says that you should give glass, old glass that you don't need, to give to kids. Because they like to break it. It's an outlet for their aggression. I mean, kids need an outlet for their aggression. So you give them, kids, they like to break things. So give them something to break for an outlet for their aggression. I mean, we don't hold and understand. Our philosophy is not repress yourself. You understand? Walk around repressed. Our philosophy is guidance. We don't say you can control an act. You can train your child to control an act. There's nothing wrong. You can train a person to control an act. But once you ask them to repress an emotion, then you're harming the kid. That's destruction. So you can't ask him to repress himself. You can say you can't do this act. You can't go in the street unless you're with an adult. You understand? When you get older, you train them to look both ways. That's an act. You understand? You have to protect the child, so you teach them an act. That's the way the Torah works. The Torah first works is keep halacha. Halacha are actions. You can control yourself in action. Unless you're neurotic, you can't do it. But the thing is, normal people can do actions or control themselves from doing actions. But when you start working on the person's traits and personality, that has to be done with chokhmah. It can't be done just by repressing, by repression. We don't hold that you should spoil the kid. In other words, actions, you can definitely control a child from doing actions, but don't repress his personality. Like, for instance, sometimes a parent is frustrated and says, stop crying, or you're not going to get what you want. You know what I mean? That's a catastrophe. Why is that? The kid wants to cry. What's wrong with crying? Because it gets on your nerves. That's not what's wrong. So you repress the kid. That's not our approach. Our approach is let's say you're a sadist. So Chazal say that you should become a shochet. And you have an outlet for your sadism. They say David HaMelech was a sadist. So what did he do? He went out to wars. That was halakhically correct. We hold from guiding the emotions to a correct path, but not to undo the emotion, not to repress the emotions. You understand? So therefore, I must start with the vengeance. And therefore, first, if you can't control your anger to carry out your vengeance, then we have a big problem here. That's a real big problem. But if a person could at least control himself to carry out his vengeance, I mean, at least not against halacha, and he's working out it in a just way, and he's working out it in the best possible way, so he doesn't have to create a greater enemy, you understand, or even lower the level of anger, so that's a better thing. We don't hold that you should not do physical. Sometimes the conclusion is, after you think about it, There's no. Sometimes you have to carry out violence. I mean, David HaMelech went to war. I mean, we went to war. The God told us to kill out seven nations, men, women, and children. I mean, we're not against the physical. Sometimes the conclusion is that the only way to get this person off my back is to punch him out. That's it. He's a bully, and that's all he understands. And nothing else will work. You understand? We're not against using violence, but it should be with chokhmah, and it should not be against justice, and it should not be evil. Now, the second half where it says, Moshel Berucho, so the Rabbeinu Yonah says, this is a higher level than slow to anger. Okay? Where you control you, he says, here the person does not take vengeance. Okay? The person reached the level where he doesn't take vengeance. But however, for practical reasons, he works it out, okay? He works out things because of practical reasons. It's because of practicality. Somebody's going to steal, somebody's going to ruin his reputation by talking Lashon Hara. Somebody is going to steal from him, rob him, okay? So therefore, he works out strategy to protect himself. Let's say he has to go to court. He has to work out a strategy. You understand? So he works out strategy for practical reasons. So he says that person is better when he controls himself with no vengeance or anything. It's better than controlling other people, controlling a whole city, going out to be controlled. That's better. Okay? In other words, the second half says, he that rules his spirit is better than he that captures a city. In other words, when you capture a city, you have to control others. But slow to anger, working out strategy for the practical, then you have to control yourself again. So again, it's controlling yourself and working out control of the physical through controlling yourself. Okay? The first half is, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, is where a person wants to take vengeance. Says, at least do it in a wise way, and don't be unjust, don't go against Torah. Second thing is, when you want done vengeance, but you want to do it in a when you're in trouble practically, you should protect yourself practically. Okay? So therefore, that's what Chachma, so therefore you control yourself to work it out in a wise way. So both halves are controlling yourself to control the world, or control the world directly through might. That's the two possibilities. But the only difference between the first half and the second half is the first half in the Chachma side is the person thinks the truth to take vengeance. The second half is not take vengeance, but he thinks the truth to be practical. So first he has to control his emotions, not to get angry, and not to use brawn, but to use Chachma. In the other side of the Pasuk, the first person is the person that just, if you go against him and awaken his anger, so then he'll just act out based on, he'll scream at you, tell you off verbally or physically, he'll just attack. Well, the second half is where the person wants to go out to control others. That's his lifestyle, that he wants to go out to control others. That is the two, that is the comparison of the two sides. This pasuk does not deal with the problem. The question is, how do you get from a person of vengeance to a person of practicality? The pasuk is not dealing with it, but we will deal with it. Okay? This pasuk is not dealing with it, but we'll deal with it. We'll see in a minute. Okay? Alright, the question is, what is the difference between slow to anger, where he wants to take vengeance, and where the second one is that he controls his spirit, in other words, that it's a practical thing? What's the difference between the two? Okay. The answer is that if you attack my emotions, in other words, you insult me, there's no real practical harm. I'm hurt, but it's my ego. I have to understand that I partake of the insult. How do I partake of the insult? Because since I have ego, so therefore I'm leaving myself open to be insulted. I'd be better off, thanks. I'd be better off by dealing with my ego than by taking vengeance, but it's not a practical thing. Practical is, like I said, is where somebody's going to take away your money, somebody's going to beat you up, somebody's going to talk Lashon Hara about you and ruin your reputation. So there you have a right to protect yourself. That's a practical thing. So you should use Chachma to protect yourself. That's two things between, as I understand, vengeance you understand? In other words, let's say, for instance, in the second half, let's say, for instance, I have the emotion of vengeance, but I'm still taking care of practical things. I should do it in a practical way. Okay? All right. Pasuk 33 says, in your lap they place the lottery, and from God is all his justice. Okay? Now the commentary saying the lap he places the lottery, that's a metaphor for chance. There are other examples, different things, more complicated, but let's just take it. In other words, in everyday life, we have a life, you know, things happen about you, it's a matter of chance. Okay? That's one thing. That's one thing. But it says that from God is his justice. From God comes justice. So it's not chance. Okay? So the first half, the second half is removing the first half. It says, you certain people go by the life of chance, and that's it. Some people recognize that everything has a purpose. Okay? Now, the thing is, by purpose, doesn't have to be God intervening in the doesn't have to be God intervening in hashkacha purpose and God's personal supervision. It could be in the laws of nature, because the laws of nature is also a system. And if there's any question about the injustice of the laws of nature, we have a right to ask questions about God's justice insofar as laws of nature is concerned. How does laws of nature work, and why it's just, and why it's unjust, okay? So, it could be the laws of nature, okay? So, the thing is that if you look at it from chance, what it means by, if you look at it from chance, in other words, the chance happenings, and I have to work it out, From God, I have to accept God's will, okay? Now, the thing is that there's certain things that happen that are based on the laws of nature. So when I look at the laws of nature, I know that I don't have much choice. In other words, if I fall off a building, I'm going to go down. I'm not going to go up. You understand? It's the law of nature. Okay? So there's certain things that I must accept that is out of my hands. Okay? That's one way of looking at God's justice. It's out of my hands. Also here, another thing is sometimes people act incorrectly towards you, right? And you react to them as if they could do anything they want, and like, why are you doing such a thing, or I'm going to force you not to. A lot of human nature, people can't change. That's also part of the laws of nature. Your personality, that God created a system called psychology that works according to a certain system, and even how to change that system, that's a lot of the area of Musa that we're learning, is how to change it, because of free will, God gave us the ability to change it. But it's not easy, like we said before, it's not through force that we change things, it has to be with chokhmah, it has to be slow process. You understand? So therefore, sometimes when somebody is acting in a bad way, in other words, so sometimes you can control it, sometimes you can avoid it, sometimes you stay away from the situation. Not all the time, but many times the option is not changing the person. You understand? The option is not changing the person. The option is working around the person. Or if you can't, like when you reach the point like Rabbi Akiva, where they torture them to death, then just accept reality. You understand? Then you have to accept reality that you're in this situation. That's also reality. Okay? So that's one type of acceptance of reality. Second type of acceptance of reality is that there is no such thing as ownership insofar as money is concerned. Halakhically, illegally, we have to have laws of ownership, or not we'd be live like animals, because to live in a society we have to have laws, but it's a legal system. But philosophically, there's no such thing as ownership. Okay? Paro tried to own things. So he built his pyramids, and he took his slaves and all his money so that he should keep all his things, okay? Now he and all his things are in the museums. You understand? So ownership doesn't work, okay? Real ownership does not work. So basically, you have usage. While you're here, you have usage. You don't own your shirt. You don't own your clothing. You use your clothing. Legally, you own it. But philosophically, it could be ripped. So there's no more, you can't own, you're not interested in owning rags, or you could die. So therefore you don't own it anymore. It's only while you're alive you have usage. So philosophically there's only usage, not ownership. Okay? Now the question is, what does this have to do with our idea of control? In other words, there's two ways of looking at the world around you. One is that I don't have much control. You understand? I want to get to school, my car has to work, I can't be sick, the bridge has to be up, the traffic congestion has to be that I could get through, you understand? There's an accident on the bridge and I'm stuck in traffic, I could be stuck there for hours, I will not get to school. So there's things that I know that are out of my hands. My personality, you can't change overnight. You understand? So therefore, right now, who I am, I must accept who I am. But however, since there's free will, we could change it, the whole idea of Muslim. But that's going to take years. And how much you could change, certain people could change more, certain people could change less. How much you could change is not in your hands. All you could do is the best that you can. But what's going to happen is out of your hands. Results are out of your hands. You can only do correct actions and not have any real ownership, just usage. Everything in this world is usage. Okay? Is that clear? There's only one idea in the pasuk. The first half of the pasuk is where I think I have control over the physical world. Okay, where I try to control the physical world. The other half is I recognize I have very little control. My real control, my really biggest control is free will. That I could make decisions, I could think. That is where my free will is. That is where my control is. After that, there's not much control. Even changing my personality is not much control. It's even if I do all the correct actions, there's a certain amount I could change, and it might take years. You understand? So it's a very slow, and in the physical world I don't have control over, and objects I don't own. Okay? Okay. In other words, with people, a person that looks at life without looking at it as a system, you understand? That's the first half of the pasuk. He doesn't look at life as a system. So he thinks he can maneuver anything he wants because he doesn't see that there's a system that you can't fudge, that there's laws of nature that you can't fudge. He just looks at life that he has total free will. He can do anything he wants, and he can change things around however he wants to. So the question is, what does this have to do with the last pasuk? What is it telling me? The thing is that this pasuk is telling me you're totally not in control. And there's nothing to get angry about either. Because if somebody steals something from me, it's not mine. I just have usage out of it. Okay? So now I have a little less usage. And I can't control people that steal. I can protect myself to a certain extent. I have to do that which is logical in a practical way. Right? But it's just practical. There's no guarantees. You understand? So therefore, I accept life as a, that there's no guarantees, but I must live a practical life to the best that I can. So I try to protect my things, and I try to protect myself. But if somebody takes it, well, either I could get it back through, try to work it out rationally to get it back. But what we're doing is we're removing, we're telling you philosophically, there is no such thing as you being in control. That's a mistake. It's just an emotional way of life that you look at things that you're in control. In reality, you don't have much control. Practically, you got to do it best, but there's still no guarantee. In other words, there is a progression here. We want you to become a thinker. The only cure is becoming a thinker. So first, we use your emotional needs. We say, you hold you're in control. You know, we can't take that away from a beginner. That's very dangerous. You understand? You're going against his whole personality. You can't do that. So what we say is, you're in control. But you can be in control in one of two ways. Either physically be in control or through chachma. But to be controlled through chachma, you're going to have to control yourself first. So first control yourself and work it out with chachma. And so you become a thinker. Whether the first half of the process through vengeance, so through the second half of the pasuk, where only practicality, you think you're in control, and you, the only thing is, you work your control out, you control yourself, so that you have the time to think it through, and then you do it in the best possible way, to the least amount, with the least amount of pain. But then when you become a chacham, at a certain point I could tell you, where ideas become real to you, where you see how ideas work. You must go through the first step. You can't skip the first step. You must, it must become real to you. In the first step, ideas become real to you. Now, once the ideas are real to you, then I could tell you that you are really not in control. And then that idea has to affect you. You understand? Most people, beginners, the second idea, you can know it with your mind, but don't want to bother working on it. You understand? I would tell beginners to work on the second step. That's a very high development where you accept reality. The first thing is to accept reality is to see as you, right now, in other words, if you're first learning Mishlei today, this is the first pasuk you're learning, so you have advice, but it's real, it's not real, you know what I mean? But you start experimenting and you really see how it works. If you're able to work out good strategies and you're able to see how it works, you see that Chachma works. So when you see that Chachma works, you start having a respect for Chachma. And the Chachma becomes real to you. And then just an idea makes it real, even though I did without experimentation. But it must start with a certain amount of experimentation that ideas become real. That is the first pasuk. That's pasuk 32. 33 must be where ideas are real to you, or not that you're going to have terrible, terrible conflict if you're going to try and take away the physical world from yourself. And say, you're going to be able to walk around insecure, you're going to become neurotic. It'll be a catastrophe. A person can't walk around insecure. It has to be on a certain level where Chachma is real, and you have an alpha ego that you can take that, that you can live with saying, yeah, it makes sense, there's no security, that's fine. How many people could do that? You understand? So therefore, that second step is not for everybody. That is not for the beginner of Mishlei. The first pasuk is for the beginner of Mishlei. The beginner of Mishlei, the second pasuk is not. That's why these pesukim are verse in chapter 16. You had already a certain amount of pesukim where you could develop to this. Your ideas could become real to you. Okay? In other words, verse 33 takes away my need for control altogether. I recognize that my only control is free will, and I could make my free will that either in actions, like tshuva, let's say I'm Yom Kippur. So let's say I don't wash before bread. So I could force myself and do an action that I could do. I could do the action, okay? But let's say a person wants to undo Lashon Hara, you don't have free will just to stop Lashon Hara. Most people don't. So you have to take upon yourself a study of Lashon Hara, and that in the future, so your free will is only that I'm going to study this subject. You understand? That's my free will, that I could study this subject. But not that I'm going to take it away. You understand? But there's a feeling that I can control but before, when I start out, there's a feeling that I can control the physical world. By studying Mishlei, I can control the physical world through Chachma. I can control others. All I have to do is control myself. Don't carry out my emotions right away. Just think it through with Chachma, and then I can control the world. That's the feeling a person gets when he starts learning Mishlei altogether. The second pasuk is a person where the ideas of Mishlei are real. When he hears an idea, it's real to him already. You see? And he feels secure in his Chachma. He has to have a certain security. So then he suddenly could take away all his security and look at life and say, look, there's no real security. Everything is practical. But there's no real security, ultimately. In other words, how much security a person needs is different levels, but I'm saying that if you really see without a doubt verse 33, then you'll say there is no security in the physical world. Anything could happen at any moment, and you could lose everything. Okay? I mean, Rabbi Akiva. Okay? The guy didn't do anything unjust. He lived the life of Mishlei 100%. The situation was that he was tortured to death. Had nothing to do with it. You understand? I mean, had to do with him, he was tortured. But it just happened. You're not in control. You understand? And even where you are in control, it's very, very little. So it's a certain amount to take on verse, to start dealing with verse 33. You first must have security first in Chachma. The first step is changing the security, the control of the physical world, to the control of your mind, and to control the physical world through your mind. So you have a certain security. Then you turn away from it that there's no real control, there's only practicality, but ultimately there's no control. You understand? So that's the development of the thing where there's no control. There's no real control in your life. You understand? But the thing is that most people cannot live with that. That's why I say this pasuk is not for everybody. This pasuk, you can know the idea, But just go back to the old life, the old way of living, of control. Don't try to undo your control. You can't do that. That takes a certain amount of years of work. It takes years of work. And work in the area of Chachma. Chapter 17, verse 1. It says, it's better to have dry bread and peace with it, okay, than a house full of sacrifices of quarrels. Rashi learns sacrifices, he learns it literally, okay? Well, most of them a person mean like meat. You understand? So that's what we will learn. In other words, the first half of the pasuk is saying, it's better to have dry bread and have peace than to have meals like parties or festivities and this quarrel. Okay? That's what the verse is saying. Okay? So the question is, what does this have to do with what we've been doing till now? When you realize that there is the physical world, there's no control, there's no psychological attachment to it. So what becomes important in your life? What's the most important thing in your life? Just a little tranquility. Just a little peace and quiet. You understand? In other words, most people's lives are constantly, because of their emotions, they're constantly driven. To make money, to have parties, they're constantly driven. We're constantly driven for all our different desires. We don't have a moment's rest. People can't stop. You understand? First they're working for their 4L. Then they're working that they can become the valedictorian or salutatorian. You understand? And then they're working for college. And then and emotionally, you look at the way they're working, it's not a practical thing. It's a competitive thing. It's a success. I'm great. I'm special. You understand? That's the way I evaluate myself. It's a psychological drive that doesn't let you stop. How many people do you know that could retire and be happy? Very few. There's very few people that I know that could retire, because what happens? All their psychological needs are not being satisfied. You know? I could tell you dozens of cases that I've heard again and again of people that retired and either were very unhappy or they went back to business. They had to go back to business because people cannot relax. There's no relaxation. There's no peace in this world. You see? People say they want peace, but that's not true. You see? But once there is no ownership, if there is no ownership, you're not attached to the physical world, what is left? Only a little peace and quiet. You understand? So, but the thing is, I can't give up everything. I can give up to a dry piece of bread. I have to eat. If you want to take away my bread, then I'm going to have to fight. You understand? In other words, you're going to take my clothing off my back, then I have to fight. In other words, there's certain amount. In other words, he is practical. There's no, like, hardly any psychological need. You understand? His main psychological need is, like, maybe he needs a bed, you know what I mean, instead of sleeping on the floor, you know what I mean? But the thing is that he should be able, at this point, to start giving up the physical world, because there's only one thing left, there's a little tranquility. But he doesn't give up the physical, we're not talking about giving up the physical world for perfection. That's not our pasuk. Our pasuk is because he recognizes, because of the result, that he recognizes that there's no ownership, there's no attachment. What attachment is left to the physical world? So all there is me, and usage. So what do I want out of life? Well, peace and quiet. Most people can't. They don't have the ability. They don't even know how. They don't even know what to do. They don't have Mishlei. He tells you what you need to get a little peace and quiet. This is the steps to get peace and quiet. You understand? And so therefore, the last step is, I'll give up everything up until you're going to take away my clothing and my house and my piece of bread. I mean, the very basic needs I mean, I can give it up because it's not worth anything. It's not worth my peace and quiet. I'd rather sit and do and do what I could enjoy life instead of fighting with you. I'd rather give it up than fight. You understand? So the thing is that is the ultimate way I see that there's no, it's not worth it to be attached to the physical at all. If it's going to mean a fight. I'm not saying, you understand, if somebody wants to take away everything, you understand, let's say you're a millionaire, and somebody's going to try to take away every single thing that you own, then fight right away. You don't have to wait for your last piece of bread, because you know he's going to try and take everything away. You see? Then you have no choice. You have to fight. But if a person just wants a part of it, it might be worth it, And you're going to be in court for 5 years and battling with lawyers and this. Might be worth it to give it up, whatever the guy wants, as long as he's going to leave you alone after that. You understand? There's no emotional conflict like, you understand? A lot of these fights that people fight, it becomes a competition. He's not going to beat me, I'm going to beat him. You understand? It's not practical. When a person goes to court, many times it's not practical, it's competition. You understand? In Enron, they said on the top echelon, every day was competition, constant pressure. It was a pressure cooker. These guys were driven to beat the other guy out. They were wealthy guys. They were millionaires. But it wasn't the money. It was the competition that was constantly driving them. You see? That's after years and years of going through these steps. Then you could reach a person of peace. In other words, the three psukim go like this. The first pasuk is I'm in control, but we tell you that the control is better through chachma than through brute force. The next pasuk tells you get rid of control completely. The third step is that once you get rid of control, then you see the only thing I have in life is my own pleasure, my own enjoyments, and avoidance of conflict and pain. That's all there is in life, just the me. And it's a practical thing. It's not ownership of me. It's just a practical thing. Usage means the best usage. What's the best usage for this being called me? Well, the best usage is if I don't have conflict. And it's worth it to give up a party so that I don't have conflict. You understand? It's worth it to give up money to avoid conflict. Because it doesn't mean anything to me anyway. It's only a practical thing. I'm not not that much in control. So that's it. I was like this. The guy on the second level, like when he first starts out, he's not on the third level. At a certain point, he might not have undone all the attachment to the physical, but suddenly there's a reality, a sense in his feelings. Not only his mind, everybody understands what I said in your mind, you understand all the steps. But emotionally, if you're talking about changing yourself over, it could take 10, 15, 20 years, you understand? So at what point you start working on the second step, meaning undoing control, where you realize there's no control in the physical world, at what point you reach the level of peace, I don't know, maybe when you're halfway through. Maybe when you're three-quarters of the way through. Maybe 90%. I don't know. You understand? And people might be different. At a certain point, the emotion takes over where suddenly you realize, what am I killing myself for? This is not worth fighting. You start figuring out what is not worth the fight and what is worth the fight. You evaluate what is worth the fight and what is not worth the fight at a certain point. Even now, you can evaluate that. You can evaluate what's worth the fight and what's not worth the fight. But it's, you understand, so that you can start doing now. The thing is like this again. The thing is that in other words, there's nothing wrong in being wealthy. Okay? There's nothing wrong in being wealthy. The question is, how much are you willing to do for your wealth? Okay? I'll give you an example. Let's say, for instance, a person has the choice, there's some people that they study Torah, they become great in the world of Torah, and then they spend a certain amount of time and become very wealthy. Like Rabbeinu Tam was very wealthy. You understand? So the thing is that Now, Bain would tell him at a certain point he could live the life of Teller and make money. He could divide himself and he knew how to put in time without taking away his life of learning. Most people cannot do that. And you have to make a choice between the life of learning and the life of money. So you're right away making choices. In other words, could you be wealthy and have all the responsibilities of the wealth and still be able to learn Torah? Could you put in the energy? You understand? So certain people have to make a decision. They just can't do both. They have to make a decision between the world of learning or the world of wealth. You could always learn, you know, half hour a day. I'm talking about a person that really wants to put in learning, be successful in learning. You have to put in a few hours a day. You understand? So the thing is that the question is, can you? Because sometimes a person is drawn, and he started having headaches and this is bothering, that's bothering, you know what I mean? This business deal, that business deal, you know? People, they can't sleep nights because of the business deal. A person like that can't learn. He can't do both, so then he has to give it up, right? But there, he's giving up. But once you realize that the physical world is not important, he's not giving up. It's only a matter of practical usage. So if you could be wealthy and have the physical world, that's fine. There's nothing wrong in it, okay? But if it's a matter of taking away from your tranquility, then you say, what do I need the physical world for? It's not worth it. So you're going to have to make evaluations. You make evaluations now. How much time should you put in college? While you're going to college, how much time should you put in college? How much time should you learn? You're always evaluating. So here also you're evaluating at a certain point now, but now your needs are greater because you have ownership, you have competition. You have to satisfy these emotions. You can't just walk away from them. That's why I said there's no repression. You have to go with chachma. And it takes time. It takes years. You understand? All these take evaluations. You have to evaluate what you can do, what you can't do. How much security you need. How much person needs. Some people need a lot of security. So they have no choice. They're going to have to learn because they're not going to can't learn. You understand? So you're constantly making these decisions of how much you should give up the physical world. But we're talking only in one area. We're talking in the area, we're just dealing with the quality of control. The quality of control, and that, if you walk away from it, it's a very, very slow process. If you make a mistake and you jump the gun before you're ready, you're going to fail. You're going to break down. If you're not ready, you're going to break down. You have to know who and what you are, what you can do. You understand? And the same thing, for you guys, practically, how much college you should go, how much learning you should go, it depends on your needs. You understand? And later on, you have to make a decision in business. How much could you put up? You understand? How much could you get involved? You understand that won't take you out of learning. These are decisions you have to make, your spiritual life versus your physical life. But here we're talking about just insofar as control, where you realize just tranquility. We're not talking about learning in general. Learning is a part of tranquility. It helps you to tranquility. But the thing is, we're just talking about tranquility. Most people don't want tranquility. Universally, they say they would like to have a tranquil life. But practically, they live the life of taiva, which keeps drawing them against all types of peace and quiet. Totally against the peace and quiet. You understand? They go the opposite. And if you are that type of person, then it takes years of training. And the first step is the life of Mishlei. Just realizing, satisfy all your needs through chachma. In other words, don't try to undo your needs. The first step is to satisfy your needs, but do it through chachma. You understand? But then also you're going to have to do, like for instance, I have to learn, so I'm going to learn, but I'll push off my pleasure for a certain amount of time. That's also has to work. But you can't give up all your pleasure. You can't become Rav Shimon Yochai and move into a cave and sit and learn. You're cracked. It wouldn't happen. You can't go beyond who you are. You must know who you are and operate according to who you are and develop from there. But once you decide you're going to develop, once you decide you're going to work on Chachma and Musa, then you're in a different ballpark. That's the ballpark. That's the free will qualitative change. That's where we draw the line. You understand? But once you make that decision, how far you could go, that's not in your hands. That's a quantitative difference between your abilities and other people's abilities. Okay? So I can't, you're asking me this question to be exact, where this, where that, where this starts, where that starts. You can't. I mean, everybody's different. You're going to have to work this out in your own life, the details. I can't answer all these details of when do you start doing, when do you start to take this step, when do you take that step. Depends on you. Depends on the person. You have to know who you are, what your needs are, how fast you can move. Well, we're doing chapter 17, verse 2. It says, a slave that's intelligent will rule over an embarrassing son, and among the brothers he will divide the inheritance. An embarrassing son means if a child that's not a thinker, you know what I mean? He just inherits the parents and he's embarrassing. That's why he's an embarrassing son, embarrass the parents. His lifestyle embarrasses the parents. That's what the Ben Mavish means. And so it says, a slave that's a thinker will work up, he'll rule over. In other words, the son will become like a slave. He'll rule over him. And he will divide, the slave will divide among the other brothers, the intelligent brothers, will divide his inheritance. Okay? Now the Meiri says, this is an observation, this verse is an observation that a person should not trust in an outside pedigree, but he should rely on a pedigree that's within himself. By pedigree means that, either money or a name, that I have a good name, you know what I mean, like I come from a person. Good lineage, right, thank you. Good lineage, or from a wealthy person, okay? So he brings a chazal, a beautiful chazal. He says, they told Rebbe Freida that this certain person, that he is the grandson of Aftilis, that he's the tenth generation from Rebbe Eliezer ben Azariah, and he's the tenth, and who is the tenth generation of Ezra. He's standing by that door. Okay? So Rav Frieda says, so what's the big deal? He says like this. If he is a thinker on his own and he doesn't have any lineage, that's good. If he's a thinker on his own and he has lineage, that's very good. That's even better. But if he says, if he has lineage and he doesn't have any thought, the fire went out. In other words, all lineage is not worth it. And so the Meiri says, in the same thing, a person shouldn't feel secure on the wealth of his father or other people that he inherits, but because Osher, listen to what he says, wealth that comes without thought or musa, thought and musa, thought alone is not good, thought and musa, you see, it's going to be lost in time. A certain amount of time will all be lost. And therefore he says, the Chachmei HaMusa, he says, the wise of a certain author, he calls the wise of a Musa, he says, don't praise yourself on wealth that could soon be lost, only in the intelligence, mind, and Musa. You see? Because then he explains the Pasuk, what the Pasuk means, is that you could start from a nothing and you could control your boss. You understand, a foolish person, in the end you'll become in control. If you're an intelligent person, know how to work it, then you could be in control. And if you're a foolish person, you could have all the money in the world, all the lineage, and you'll just be a failure. That's basically what the pasuk is saying. The question is, the Meiri says that if you're wise and you don't have lineage, that's good. But if you're wise and you have lineage, that's very good. Okay? There are two benefits of lineage. One is that if you're trained well, so in other words, let's say you're raised in the house of a chacham. So if you're raised in the house of a chacham, so at a young age you're trained to think. But if you're raised in the house of not a chacham, then you have to start from scratch. So in that way, for a beginner, you're raised in the house of a, not the lineage, but insofar as chacham is concerned. Okay? But lineage also has a better thing. It gives you better genes, which means that you can become greater. A good lineage is will give you genes. You understand? You come from the house of David, it's a different type of lineage than if you come from some other person. You understand? The lineage gives you better genes, so you can become greater. Okay, we're going to start at verse 3. A refinery for silver and a furnace for gold. It's also two types of things. One were to refine silver, one to refine gold. And God tests the hearts. Once again, the verse says there's refining silver and there's refining gold, and God tests the hearts. So we will read the Erie. He's very good. It's worth reading. Okay? So it's just like the vessel that refines the silver and gold, okay? So you could test out the different types of metals. When you get, in other words, a refinery, there's the pure silver, pure gold, and then there's the dross. Dross means it has other types of metals in it. It says at a certain point when it's in the refinery, you could tell the difference where, which is the, you could define the difference between the silver and the dross, or the gold and the dross. Says the same thing, God tests the hearts of man, that he can tell the difference between the good part of man and the dross of man. Okay? So he says, this is a, these remarks are to point out that some people become chassidic, mischastim. Mischastim comes from the word chassid, like it could mean being kind, or sometimes it means becoming religious. Okay? So it could go either way. Right? But either way it works. Okay? That some people want to be religious in the eyes of people, and they bring them close through arvam. Arvam comes from olav, to ambush. Like the sneaky way they try to win over people. He says, and it's on the manner that our sages hinted to. They gave a hint. They said, this matter is like a pig that spreads out its hooves and says, see, I am pure, I'm kosher. Why? Because there's two signs for kosher. One is a split hoof and one he chews the cud. Now, a pig has split hooves, but he doesn't chew the cud. That's why he's not kosher. Okay? So the Chazal, when they made a metaphor that a person wants to show how nice he is, he shows his nice qualities but hides the bad qualities. So he says the pig shows his cloven hoof. Says, see, I'm kosher. You see? So that is the that is what we're talking about. That people try to cover up their faults. Okay? And he says there are many that put on tefillin on their heads and tzitzis on their clothing, and then they go out and do all types of evil. You understand? He says, and on this our sages darshan, listen to this, they quote the pasuk, you should not mention God's name in vain. Okay? Now halachically it means you shouldn't use God's name in vain. You shouldn't use God's name out of the you know what I mean, like swear, or sometimes you use God's name in different ways, you shouldn't use it. Okay? So he's saying when you do mitzvahs to cover up your evil acts, that you're showing your cloven hoof, even though you don't chew the cud, right? But you're doing it, says that's mentioning God's name in vain, philosophically. You understand? It's a philosophical idea that you're showing, you're like mentioning God's name in vain when you put on tefillin and tzitzis and cheat. Absolutely correct. A good act does not compensate, because a good act usually covers up a bad act. Okay? In other words, but the halacha is mentioning God's name in vain. Here you are using God's mitzvot to cover up. You're using them in vain because you're only using it as a cover up, so you should be able to cheat. Okay? He says in Talmud Yerushalmi, they have a story that there was this man that he gave over to a wise man a pocket of money, a purse of money. It was Erev Shabbos. So he had no choice. He had to give it to him. It was Erev Shabbos. So he said, you can take care of it then. And he was an intelligent man, a wise man. When Shabbos ended, and he came before the wise man to collect, to get back his purse, he denied it. The guy says, you never gave it to me. like this is chutzpah. You have chutzpah to the guy's face, right? So he says back, he says, you know, I did not trust in you, but I trusted in the one that's above your head. There we go. You understand? What he's saying is that just because a person is wise doesn't mean you can trust them. When it comes down to money and things, there's certain things, I mean, there's certain people that you can, but you have to know who the person is. Just because a person is intelligent, or a person that, the first case was only mitzvahs. Here we're talking about a person that learns Torah. You understand? He was an intelligent guy. He was a wise person. You understand? So the thing is, sometimes even the chacham, you have to know when you can trust him. Here he had no choice. Says, in this situation, in other words, the way I would explain it is, he took the best possible situation, that the guy was wise, there's a better chance, but then in reality, you have to rely on God. And also in the Talmud Yerushalmi, they say like this. A talus that you wrap yourself in should be in your eyes like a saddle or a backpack of a donkey. Okay? Valzenema, and they quote a pasuk, V'yoreisa me'elokecha ani Hashem. You should fear God. You should fear God. You should fear your God. I am God. Okay? This is fear of God. Okay? So what does it mean? That when you put on a talus and tefillin, it should be like the backpack or a saddle of a donkey. Okay? What he's saying is there are two ways of relating to mitzvahs. I'll give you an example. Somebody mentioned that he was building a sukkah like really attached to his house, and there was two ways of doing it. One would like be like totally in his house, and one was like still on the outside, but it was better protected. So he said, we made it the second way, because if we did it in the house, it wouldn't feel like sukkahs. Like, you have to be outside in sukkahs, you know what I mean? That attitude is an incorrect attitude. Okay, that it has to feel like sukkahs. What I mean is because what they're trying to do is they have a certain religious attachment to sukkahs. And they're trying to fit their sukkah into their religious emotion. That is not the way we do it, because that would be that satisfying. That's just doing it because I feel that way. We have halacha. Halacha means a legal system. That's a responsibility. So if I could do it in the house and be comfortable, so then I should do it in the house and be totally comfortable in the best possible way, as long as it's halachically done. It must be done because it's in other words, that's what he said, it has to be like a backpack. We're not talking about a Moshe Rabbeinu, a person that loves over the level. We're talking about like a beginner of Mishlei, like he still has conflicts with the mitzvah. But the thing is, what people do, not to have conflict, they put it within their religious emotion. That is a very dangerous thing, because the religious emotion can make them do things outside the halacha because it fits into their feelings. We are obligated to do it because God said and God told us the prescription exactly how to do it. Very clearly. And that is halacha. And therefore I must take it on as a responsibility, not a good feeling. If you have a good feeling about it, then it's questionable. In other words, like this. When you go out to your sukkah and it was just raining, like, if you go out and you're not obligated, so the Gemara says you're a fool. If you don't go out when you should go out, so you're violating the mitzvah. I mean, there's tension, which is the right way. You understand? Should I go out? Shouldn't I go out? It's not a feeling. A lot of people say, they go out in the rain, Oh, I feel religious. Well, what do you mean you feel religious? You're a fool. The Gemara says openly, that's foolish. You understand? You must keep halacha. You understand? A person that has, let's say he can't take yellow jacks. And yellow jacks come into the sukkah. I mean, some people, it drives them absolutely crazy. They're wrong in staying in the sukkah. They're wrong. They should go in. You understand? The thing is that you have to know, you have to keep halacha, must be responsible for it. The Vilna Gaon said by Rus, right? When she had to make the decision, so he says, Naomi saw, he works it out in the pasuk, that Naomi saw she was in conflict. Then he accepted it. Then she accepted her. And she took her along. Says, why? I mean, she's in conflict. Says, because she saw the life that she was given up. She evaluated. She saw what she was given up. She saw the benefits of what she was given up. And she saw the benefits of living the life of Torah. And she was in conflict. She was working it through. Says, that, you know, is a true desire. Says, but if she was 100% secure, like a powerful religious emotion, she's going to become religious, then she's hiding the other side. He says, that is the Yetzirah. That is not really the Torah way. You see? You must work, you must know why Torah, how Torah works. And Torah works by halachic system. And it must be based on the halachic system. And if you keep it according to the halachic system, you will feel responsibility. Is it this way? Am I obligated? Am I not obligated? Should I do it this way? How should I do it? When should I do it? All the complications of halacha. You have to work out. You have to come to a decision. And even after you're through, I have no choice. I have a certain point. I have to do the act. But you're not secure. There's so many shittas. There's so many opinions. There's so many views. So many different things. You understand? It becomes complicated. You're never 100% sure. But you have to do the act, so you make your decision. I mean, how many times did a rabbi paskin, and then 2 years later, paskin differently, made a decision differently? You see, he's still working it through. That means he worked it through, and he felt it was this way a little more, but he didn't have 100% proof, it wasn't 100% clear. It's a high probability. But then when he worked it through again, then he saw it the other way, so he went the other way. You know what I mean? Once you feel secure, that's the religious emotion. You ask what you want to do. You want to feel that security. You see? Okay? So the thing is that just like we refine silver, in other words, or gold, to recognize the dross in the metal, so you must recognize the dross in your own heart. In other words, okay? And there are ways of recognizing this. And the Meiri puts it down to very practical. It's not just a magical thing that God knows. But you can also know, okay? The first thing is that if you live a contradictory life, it's very important to be able to see contradictions in your own life, okay? Right? So a contradiction shows that there's something not real. Okay? Whenever there's a contradiction, it shows that it's not real. Okay? That it's, right? So that's how science works. Wherever you look in the physical world, you find a contradiction, you know it's not right. But we have two parts. One of us, one part that sees reality, and one part that lives an irrational life. Right? So if we have the ability to go against reality. But it will show up either in consequences, like we always say by Mishnah, but it will also show up in contradictions. So if you keep one part of Torah, like you keep the Talis and Tefillin on the one hand, and then you cheat people on the other hand, that's a contradiction. You're living a contradictory life. You're not living in reality. But you're not living according to the Torah system. You understand? Or even if you understand. So the thing is there are that the first thing, you must have the ability to see contradictions in your life. The second thing, what he's saying is you must be able to see contradiction between your motive and your act. If the purpose of that reality is one thing, the purpose of halacha is one thing, and you put it in a different framework than your own framework, you see, that's also a contradiction. That's also something wrong. You see? So then you know that this person called human, this person is not referring. He has to separate, he has to get rid of the dross. And the first step in getting rid of the dross is to recognize first the contradictions, that's easier, because those are actions, you understand? And then also to see the framework in which you're operating, you understand? You have a certain, whenever you do an act, it must be in a certain framework. And if it's not in the correct framework, that is also wrong. Like he gives an example here that you keep halacha must be like a saddle or a backpack on a donkey. What does that mean? It means you sense a real responsibility. It's not fits in comfortable into my personality. You see? So the thing is that you have to just recognize that and start. I mean, you can't change overnight. See, the difficulty is most people don't like to be wrong, so they can't see these faults. You have to understand, you have to be able to see these faults and start working on it, and some of them will be for years, and some of them will be for the rest of your life, and you might not make it. You might take a few steps in the area, but you might not be perfect. Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake. I mean, he hit the rock. I mean, you can't be perfect. You understand? If you have to be perfect, then you're not going to be able to work here. You're not going to be able to work on Mishlach because you're going to have to see faults that could take years to undo. You understand? So you have to understand that if you see these faults in you, that doesn't mean you're, well, okay, it's over with, I'm a terrible person. You must be able to accept that I'm a human being, this is the way human beings were made, I do things contradictory, I have contradictions in me, I also have motives that are wrong, and now I have to start working on it. Okay? And he says, that's fear of God. In other words, if you do it based on your emotions, that is not fear of God. Because he quoted the pasuk that for Yireisim Elokecha, you shouldn't be afraid of God. You understand what does it mean? It means fear of God means that I know what God wants from me and I do it for why he wants me. I don't fit it into my framework to make it more comfortable for me. And that's where a lot of the contradictions come from. Because you want the religion to be comfortable for you. And it should satisfy your emotions. Certain emotions gives me security, God loves me, all these things it gives me. I'm not saying it doesn't. But the thing is, if you work it in your framework, that's dangerous. But if you work it in God's framework, then that is what is necessary. You have to be very careful, because the need for religion, you see, is a universal thing all over the world. People have this religion. You see that it's a very important emotion. And you have to be very careful that it's not that emotion, but you're obeying God, and the framework in which you're supposed to keep it is the way God tells you to keep it, that framework, not to fit into your framework. Saying that if you have these emotions, don't give up hope. That's not the purpose. The purpose is that you have to start working on it. Whether you complete it or not is not the question. It's not like getting a degree. It's you must work on it until either you can cure it or until you die. That's it. That's your job. And as far as you get, if you take one step, that's fine. If you take two steps, like Chazal say, it's easier to learn all of Shas than to change one trait. So you're dealing with things that are very hard. You understand? We're up to verse 4. It says, an evil person listens to faults of others, and a liar listens to stories of destruction. Okay? Alright. So, the first half is talking about an evil person that does evil. So he says, then listen to Lashon Hara. What is Lashon Hara? Lashon Hara deals with people's weaknesses. Okay? And a person that listens to Lashon Hara will listen to stories of destruction of others. Okay? So the question is, so what is he telling you? Basically, the verse is saying that evil people listen to Lashon Hara, and people that speak Lashon Hara listen to tales of destruction of others. There are stories of people that are destroyed. They enjoy those stories. What I think he's saying is a person that talks Lashon Hara and a person that does evil comes from the same source in the human being. You understand? There's a certain source in the human being that's aggressive against other people, that they want to hurt other people. A person that just talks Lashon Hara, a person that does evil, is no difference. It comes from the same source. The only difference that I could see between the two is the person that talks Lashon Hara is a coward. So he can't confront another person. He can't do it to another person. You understand? Only the person that will confront another person and destroy him. You understand? But the fact is that insofar as human nature is concerned, a lot of people think, in other words, because of his power taking away certain problems, people think when they talk Lashon Hara, they could still be good. You understand? It would still be good if, somehow people talk Lashon Hara, they still think they were good people. Now, the source of the Lashon Hara is no different than an evil person. The desire is to destroy. But the only thing is, if I don't have the guts to destroy physically, I have too much guilt to destroy physically, so I do it behind your back, and I do it verbally. Even though the guy that tells Lashon Hara would not do the action, but he enjoys hearing about it, because when he hears about it, then it makes him feel satisfies an emotion. What emotion is he satisfying? The same emotion that satisfies the person that actually does it. But we're going back to verse 3, okay, about the refineries, okay? Now, the question that's being asked is that, in other words, when a person does a mitzvah, there should be an inherent attachment to the mitzvah, right? And what I seem to be saying is not only is there not an inherent attachment to the mitzvah, but however the person is in total conflict when he does the mitzvah, okay? That is the question that's being asked. I'll ask you a question, okay? Let's say you go into business. Now you have to make a decision. Okay? Now, how many hours do you spend working out that decision? I mean, people, they can't sleep nights because they're afraid maybe the other way was right. Maybe this way is right. You understand? So when you take on a responsibility, it's a real responsibility. But people only see that when it comes to money or physical things, they see the responsibility. Obeying God is a responsibility. When I obey God, it's a responsibility. Okay? And therefore, I must make sure that I'm obeying God. So now, should I go out to the sukkah or should I not go out to the sukkah? It's dripping a little bit. Is that considered mitzayir? Am I being in pain that I should stay out of the sukkah? Or no, it's not enough to be that it's not considered a pain and I should go out to the sukkah. Yeah, I mean, if I go one way, I'm obeying God, and I go the other way, I'm not obeying God. Now, shouldn't I be nervous about obeying God? Shouldn't I feel responsible in obeying God, my attachment to God? In other words, that's what I'm saying, there's two ways of looking at it. One is I feel a good feeling. I feel something, attachment to the mitzvah. Another, I feel a responsibility to God. That when God tells me these laws, that should be as real to me as $1 million. It's no different. If I have to make a deal, and if I make the wrong decision, I could lose $1 million. If I make the right decision, I make $1 million. Do you know how much time, how many gray hairs this person is going to get over that decision? Well, how much more so should I worry about where I have to get, where it's a question whether I'm going to be obeying God? And that's what it means, fear of God. The mitzvah is the fear of God, not an attachment to the mitzvah. It's an attachment to God. It's my relationship to God, not my attachment to the mitzvah. The mitzvah is I am obeying God. I'm relating to God. And I'm worried, it bothers me, whether I am really doing the mitzvah or not. The question is, again, on the first half. If a person... The person puts on tefillin, then he cheats, right? But the fact is, he's putting on tefillin, and it's a kosher tefillin, he does it all correctly, 100% correctly, and the same thing with a talis, and he does all the mitzvahs, but he doesn't cheat, okay? I mean, he does cheat, okay? Now the question is like this. Are you keeping mitzvahs, or are you relating to God? When you do mitzvahs, is the purpose of mitzvahs to relate to God or to obey God more? Not to relate to God, to obey God. Mm-hmm. Or is the purpose of mitzvahs to do actions? If it's to do mitzvahs, so then I did this one and not that one. But if it's to obey God, I'm not obeying God. I'm not obeying God because the fact is that I'm not doing that. I'm not obeying God. In other words, like this, if I only keep part of the system, I'm not obeying God. I'm only satisfying some emotion within me. I'm doing this to satisfy an emotion, but not to obey God. If I'm doing it to obey God, I should do the things that are against my personality or doesn't fit in with my religious emotions. So therefore, I should also not cheat. You understand? In other words, when you keep half the system, it's not obeying God because you're not keeping the system. You're keeping particular laws. We don't have particular laws. We have a system. The particulars fit into the system. You understand? If I don't keep the system, then I'm not relating to God. Just a clarification. If a person cannot control himself, like he goes into business and he really wants to keep halacha, but his emotions take over, so that he can't help. That's why he has to study Musar, to be able to correct it. That we understand. We're talking about a person that doesn't even think about it. He thinks it's right. On the contrary, he's taking away my money so I could be more religious. You understand? Like, it's, you understand? He's, you know what I mean? He doesn't even think it's wrong.